Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Got each other on our side, plus all the folks at Fried, the Burnout Podcast with Kate Donovan.
You deserve more than feeling constantly fried to a crisp. Welcome to Fried, the Burnout Podcast, where you get the understanding, the community, and the information you need to end burnout for good. I'm your host, Kate Donovan, and all of my work focuses on hashtag ending burnout culture. Outside the pod, you'll find me on stages at conferences giving keynotes, in offices providing corporate trainings, doing virtual VIP one-on-one work, or supporting our group program, Unfried, that is run by my right-hand woman, Sarah Vosen. Both Sarah and I have been through burnout and came out stronger, happier, and more fulfilled, and we want that post-burnout growth for you, too.
Fried fam, you know that I like to find people in the wild and then turn them into podcast guests. And I was introduced to Cindy a couple of different times. We popped up in the same rooms more than once. And then she did something wild and invited strangers over to her house for dinner. And because she lives close to me, and this was an Instagram invite. She just said, do you want to come over for dinner? Any strangers? And we had to fill out a Google form with our dietary preferences and things about ourselves. And we did. And so I went to Cindy's house, which is very close to mine, and had dinner with her and four other random women. And it was lovely and amazing. This podcast, we spend so much time on your burnout stories and how hard it is to get stuck in the muck. And today we're going to sort of go there and pull you out a little bit. So today we get to talk to Cindy Spiegel, whose books, Microjoys, Finding Hope, Especially When Life Is Not Okay, and A Year of Positive Thinking, Daily Inspiration, Wisdom, and Courage, have sold hundreds of thousands of copies, have been translated into multiple languages, and become touchstones for resilience and hope. Through her beloved and occasionally irreverent newsletter, Life Created, Cindy serves up grown-ass wisdom, everyday microjoys, and zero pretense. Because life is messy, joy is necessary, and perspective changes everything. She speaks globally at conferences and companies, sharing insight on how to embrace both the beauty and complexity of life with honesty, courage, and a sense of possibility. Cindy, welcome to Fried.
What a treat. I'm so glad to be here with you, Kate. It took us a while, but here we are.
Everything in its own timing. So, your burnout story started in the fashion industry. Let's just go right there. Let's just jump.
Yeah. Funny, you know, until I filled out the application for our interview today, I hadn't really thought about being burned out. You know, I had a career in the fashion industry that I left in 2012, I believe it was, after a 15-year career. I didn't have a plan, but I knew that at that point, I was at the height of my career in the fashion industry. It wasn't going to get any better than that. I was doing all of the very impressive things from the outside, and I felt incredibly empty on the inside. It was spring 2012 Fashion Week, and we had just had our show, the brand that I was with at the time, we had just had our show at the Tents in New York Fashion Week, for anyone who's not familiar, is a very big deal in the fashion industry. An exclusive amount of designer shows there, and it's quite a spectacle. So anyway, I was doing accessories at the time. I was doing product development for accessories. So I was backstage at the show, and Anna Wintour was front of the house at the show. And it was quite a magical moment. I have a picture from that night. There's always an after party, New York City Fashion Week. We love a party. There was, of course, an after party, but there was a little bit of a break between the show ending, models getting wrapped up, and making it to the after party. I went out to dinner with a girlfriend. I have a picture that she took this night. I never looked so hollow in my life. I looked like a shell of myself, besides the fact that I felt like I was 50 pounds too thin. And it's wild looking back at that picture. And not surprisingly, I've never shown that picture. It's awful. Within 2 weeks, I left. I actually knew that night that I was done, that I was going to leave the fashion industry. I had zero plan. I gave my notice, and 2 or 3 weeks later, I was finished. And that was in spring of 2012. Yeah, it was in 2012, whatever month that was. Who knows?
What happened after that?
Well, it was a rough first go because I genuinely did not know what I was going to do with my life. Luckily, I had some very good professors. One of my graduate school professors invited me to teach at my alma mater. I study fashion, so I went to FIT. So I immediately started teaching. And honestly, I am amazing at it. I am an incredible teacher. And I couldn't have known that if this whole scenario didn't work out the way it did. So I started teaching at FIT. And one of the professors, so when you are teaching at a university level, faculty come in and they watch you teach. Essentially, one of the faculty who came in to do a review of my class said that I should be teaching a class to teachers on how to teach, and then invited me to teach at Parsons. So I went on to continue to teach at Parsons. So these are two of the best design schools in the world. So such a privilege. Still didn't know what the hell I was going to do with my life. And for any of you who have taught or do teach, you know it's not going to make you rich. It might make you happy, but it's not going to make you rich. So I certainly couldn't go from a full-time career to, you know, teaching. Yeah. Slowly, I don't think I mentioned that I was a yoga and meditation teacher yet, but somehow, while I was still in fashion, I became a yoga and meditation teacher. I've been practicing yoga since I was 28 years old. I am 47 and a half now. So it's been a while. And I do really believe that the teaching, really the practice of yoga, is part of what gave me the courage to walk away from fashion. You know, it sort of prepared me for what it felt like to be out of alignment. So yoga and meditation teacher, teaching at Parsons, teaching at FIT, so I was living in Fort Greene in Brooklyn at the time, in this beautiful lofted space. And I couldn't really afford it, but I was drawing out of my 401k because, damn it, I didn't know what I was going to do. Do not recommend, by the way. 10 out of 10. Bad idea.
Farnoosh would not be impressed.
Farnoosh would not be impressed. I started teaching yoga in my apartment. I was inviting friends that I worked with to come. So literally, I was just kind of hustling. I was figuring it out day by day. Then somebody from my yoga studio asked me if I would help her launch a fashion brand. Now, in New York City, we're all very creative and entrepreneurial. I had no idea how many people wanted to launch fashion brands. And coincidentally, I was very, very good at it because I spent a whole career doing it and studying it. So one thing led to another. I was helping a group of women launch their fashion brands. I started something called the Collective of Us, which was kind of before the Girl Boss movement, maybe at the very start of the Girl Boss movement, where it was really just about bringing women together to talk about these things. I would certainly guide them using my own lived experience, but it was really about the power of community, which I know at this point sounds so cliche, but it really was the power of bringing people together and seeing what happens. I'm going to stop there. That's how all of this started.
When did you get to the point where you were like, I'm going to write a book on daily inspiration? What? Okay. Yoga, meditation. Like I can see a pathway, but we're going from fashion to teaching, to hustling, to writing a book that goes wild. What?
So somewhere in between all of that, I actually did get certified in applied positive psychology. So I studied for a year and I did get certified. And if you know Marty Seligman, it was one of his students that did the certification. So this didn't come out of nowhere. I will say, I didn't have any dreams of writing a book. I will still say to this day, you know, I would not consider myself a writer. I consider myself a thinker who was able to sort of put that into words in a way that makes my thoughts easy to understand. I didn't study journalism. I wasn't an English major. I still haven't read most of the classics. I was giving a talk on fear, actually, in New York City at a wellness summit that I was invited to speak at. And somebody in the audience was from a publisher. Mm-hmm. And she pulled me aside afterwards and she said, "Can I take you for a drink?" And I was like, "Yeah, I love a drink. Why not?" So shortly thereafter, we went out for a drink. She asked if I'd be interested in writing a book. And I didn't have a reason to say no. So I said, yes. I wrote the book in 7 weeks. And I had no idea that this book would turn into what it did. Coincidentally, my brother a few years ago was at his psychiatrist's office and looked up and he's like, "That's my sister's book." Like it's so wild, this story. So that's how I got to writing a book. I don't intend to write books. Books find me and then I do what I have to do and I put them out into the world. And that is the truth of it.
Pride fam, one of the things that I want you to be thinking about right now is the power of putting yourself in new spaces to allow for new and different things to happen. A lot of us feel, especially when you're burnt out, you don't want to go out, you don't want to network, you don't want to do any of the things. And yet it is the weird connections that you make in the strangest of unexpected places that you never planned for that bring you to places that you never imagined that you end up sort of enjoying a lot of times. So one of the things that I've seen be successful over the years with so many of you is getting back into something you used to love and then meeting other people that love that thing. And then seeing what happens. Not expecting anything to happen necessarily, just being open to, like, who knows what could happen. So I was just talking about this morning. Do you know Michelle Ward? She's doing the record. So I went to lunch with Michelle today. And she said, we were talking about, you know, my first speaking engagement. Let me tell you guys how I got my first speaking engagement. I planned a burnout seminar at a local coffee shop at Eagle Rock Cafe.
Oh.
It was 2019. It was before the pandemic and tickets were only $15. And I put it on Eventbrite and no one bought a ticket at all. Not one person at all. And so I was like devastated. And maybe a month or two later, I got an email that said, "I found your Eventbrite link. We're looking for a burnout speaker. Will you come speak for us?" And it was $600 was the pay, which don't offer me that now, please. I won't take it. But it was $600. And I was so excited to get my first gig. And I said, "Oh, how did you find me?" She said, "Well, you know, I found your thing on Eventbrite." And I thought, oh my God, that event didn't even happen. But here we are. So a reminder to put yourself in different spaces with different people and allow things to open up because you just don't ever know. That's number one. All right. Next thing.
What a great story, by the way.
Isn't that funny?
Mm-hmm.
Here's the next thing. When I met you, you had already written Microjoys, which is the second book.
Yep.
And you just said that books found you. So can you talk about, we're going to get into Microjoys a little bit because I think everyone should own it. I think everybody on the planet needs to own this book.
I agree.
That just everyone needs to have it. How did this one show up in your life?
How did it find me? The actual book, you mean, the writing of the book, not the story of the book.
Yeah.
So again, I wasn't planning to write this book, but what I did was, you know, up until 2020, it's a little hard to tell you about the book without talking about the story of the book or the thesis, if you will, of the book. Yeah. Up until 2020, I was very guarded about what I would share. I shared a lot online. I built a whole platform online, but I was still very guarded. 2020 happened and there was an incredible tragedy in my family. And I started to speak publicly about that. Not that I had that happen before to talk about before, but I was much more guarded up until that point.
Yeah.
And sort of in the midst of my grief, I started talking about it online and I was raising money for a funeral and for a nonprofit or slash foundation. And I had started talking about something called microjoys, which were in the midst of all of this loss and grief that I was moving through, it was me noticing the daffodils that were growing outside, right? They didn't change what happened. They didn't change the tragedy. They didn't change the sort of loss that continued to happen, but they did continue to grow. And I continued to notice and to pay attention. So though I wrote a book called A Year of Positive Thinking that went on to do what it's done in the world, when I was in the midst of that kind of loss, I could not positive think my way out of it. And I say this as somebody who is a firm believer in the power of thought. And everything that I said in the Year of Positive Thinking is still true, but that wasn't going to help me in that moment. And so I started talking about these things called microjoys. I didn't even fully have a definition. I only defined it, which are easily accessible moments of joy, delight, and happiness that we experience alongside the hardest things. I only defined it when I got a book deal. So how did the book deal happen? By speaking publicly about this, this was 2020, someone who followed me, again, like you just don't know. I have never had a giant following on social media. I've never tried to build a giant following. I've just been at this for a long time. And so I have a very organic, very engaged community. A publisher followed me and reached out and she said, listen, Cindy, now this is somebody I had met in person before. She said, listen, I know you are in it right now. She said, but I really think that the world needs to hear about microjoys.
Yeah.
And so even in the midst of my grief, I am still an entrepreneur. And I was like, fuck, I got to get a literary agent. I can't do this by myself. Like I am like underneath it. So also coincidentally, a very well-regarded literary agent was following me on social media that I noticed. And so I sent her a DM. Now you don't DM a literary agent and expect them to get right back to you. But she did. And she said, let's get on a call tomorrow. And so I got on a call the next day, put her in contact with the publisher that wanted me to write this book. We went back and forth. And long story short, I didn't publish with them because the book they want. So I did. I went and put a pitch together, a very loose pitch. Again, like this wasn't a book I planned to write. It's like they asked me to do it. And I was like, shit, I should probably do something.
Yeah,
I should probably respond accordingly and put together a pitch. What do they call them? What do you call the thing when you get a book deal? This is how a manuscript. All that shit. So anyway, I put it together and they essentially wanted to pay me to change what I wanted to write. And I spoke to my agent about it and she said, well, it's up to you. And I just said, no. I am in the middle of such loss and grief. If I'm going to write a book, it's going to be the book I want to write. She said, I think we should pitch this to publishers. And well, wouldn't you know it, 4 out of the top 5 publishers in the world bid on my book. It ended up going to auction and I published with Penguin Random House, Penguin Life. But again, as you could see, I was not looking to write a book. And I can assure you that my next book will also not be a book that I'm looking to write. It will write itself just like every other book has through the life that I live, you know? Yeah. So that is the long and short of how Microjoys and that second book deal came to pass.
All right. So I want to go back to this idea. One of the biggest things that we talk about on a very almost religious basis on Fried is that gratitude does not function when you're burnt out. Mm. It just doesn't. You don't have it. You don't actually even have the neurochemicals that will allow you to feel it. You don't have access to that. It's not, you don't have enough receptors. Like it's, you're not getting to it fully. So this idea that you could be a person that writes an entire book on positive thinking with a certificate in positive thinking, applied positive thinking,
Positive psychology.
Get to a place where you're like, this shit is not doing it right now. this is something that really resonates with this audience because they are in the, like, all the way in the muck right now. They're all the way in it. And they're like, do not tell me to think positive. I don't even, it's a lie. It feels like a lie. And this is why, to me, when I read your book, I was like, oh, this is the conversation we need to have, because micro joys hold space for truth, is my interpretation of them. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that you wrote that I have underlined says this: micro joys often emerge from the muck, similar to how a lotus flower resurrects itself out of mud over and over again. The beauty of this flower is that its roots are bound in the mud that it needs in order to bloom. Its perpetual, beautiful re-emergence is born of muck, literally. And in many ways, so is ours. I just teared up. For those of you who cannot see me right now, I just teared up. And, you know, if you're a listener, you know, I have a bladder close to my eyes. It doesn't take much, but there's a whole chapter in my book called Sitting in the Muck. Mm. And how sometimes you're not supposed to get out of it. You're just supposed to sit there for a minute until it's time to move. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about using micro joys from the muck in that, because that's where you were when you wrote this book. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In, actually in the muck.
Yeah. In the shit.
In the shit. Mm. Unable to see anything that wasn't dirty for most of the day. Mm-hmm. This is how people that listen to this podcast feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, to me, the beauty of micro joys is that it coexists with life exactly as it is, right? It doesn't ask us to be optimistic. It doesn't ask us to find a silver lining. It doesn't, you know, require that we feel good. Mm-hmm. It simply asks that we acknowledge what else is true, right? So I, you know, when I'm talking about micro joys, the way I sum up the whole book is I say it's grief in one hand and joy in the other at the exact same time. Right. And we move through the world. Sometimes if it were a scale, right, it feels heavier on one side than the other. But what makes the power of micro joys so profound is that it coexists with all of the shit and all of the muck. And no matter what you are going through, you still get the choice. You still have the choice to look for the daffodil too. Right? I'm not saying it replaces, right? Finding those daffodils emerging from the ground did not bring back the loss that I experienced, right? It didn't bring back my people. It didn't change the diagnosis, but it allowed me for a moment to experience respite. And sometimes when we are in the middle of it all, that's the best we can ask for, right? We don't need to positive think our way out of it. We don't need to think shiny thoughts or pretty thoughts. We simply need to allow ourselves these moments of respite or these moments of respite. And when we do that, it starts to happen more and more and more, sort of like shifting our mindset in any other way or positive thinking. You know, the more we do it, the more it becomes habitual. And that is exactly what happens with micro joys. We simply learn to hold multiple things at once without being overly weighed down by one side versus the other. I don't know if that answered your question, but that's how they work.
Holding multiple things. Let's talk about that for a minute, because this is something that in pop psychology drives me wild.
Yeah.
Absolutely gets my goat. You can't be angry and grateful at the same time. Bitch, yes, I can.
I haven't heard that before. You can't. Is that a thing? You can't be angry and grateful?
There's so many things out there that say that there's not space for two opposing emotions simultaneously.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I'm like, we're human and humans have very messy psychology.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that we are much more complicated than one emotional track at a time. This is why I loved this book so much. It was this constant reminder of, yes, the daffodil and also the shit. Mm-hmm. Still there. Mm-hmm. And the daffodil.
Yeah, it's and.
And. Not instead of.
Yeah. But that's the culture we live in, right? It's one or the other.
Yeah.
We don't do nuance. We don't do gray. You know, another thing I often say about microgrids is that it's all gray. So if that's going to make you uncomfortable, this isn't the book for you.
Everybody that's listening just died a little bit inside.
My gosh, you know?
Burnt out people are very like...
Yeah, we want black or white, right?
Yes.
You're barking up the wrong tree. It's like, this is not going to give you that. In fact, I remember writing in the introduction that because I was writing many of these essays, and it's a book of essays, okay, because I was writing them as I was moving through this, I remembered saying in the introduction something along the lines of, you will read essays that contradict each other.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Because in that moment, that is what was true. And so if you want to hold that against me, go for it. But I'm telling you, that is just the way that we live our lives. And we are going to lose this battle if we are constantly looking to have things be one right way. And I think that's what so many of us do. And we wonder why we can't get it together, whatever that means to us, right? Because there's one answer and it's not working that way. People are not telling me the exact thing I want to hear. And so nothing works. This life is lived in the gray. We can either accept that and find a way to move through it, or we can continue to cling to either black or white. You know, it's a choice. And microjoys, the entire essence of microjoys is that we do have choice.
I want to stay in the gray for a minute. Mm-hmm. This is a huge, and like raising hand emoji, I do this too. I am not separate from this or better than this in any way, shape, or form. People that tend toward burnout are often in an all or nothing frame of mind for almost everything in their lives. If I do something wrong, then I'm a shit mother. If I mess something up at work, I'm a terrible employee. I'm either perfect or I'm a disaster. I'm either full or I'm empty. There's nothing in between. Going gray, I started learning, not from my hair, but that's another lesson. Going gray.
Soon, Kate, soon.
Oh, no, it's there. It's there. I can show you. I learned in Chinese medicine. The Chinese medicine is based on the Tai Chi symbol, the yin yang symbol, right? And it's paradox within paradox that rolls around into other paradox, and just opposites always exist, and they're rolling into each other all the time, and it never changes. And there's never anything different than that. Everything can be explained by that in the entire world. From the one came the
two. There you have it.
Right. If from the one came the three, from the three came the 10,000 things. And it's like this space of gray for people that are decidedly not gray. And they're like, I don't know how to do gray. Like, what do you mean I can mess up and still be loved? That's not true. How do we help guide people into the gray, not into the light, into the gray?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the simplest way I can think of is to ask yourself this question: what else is true? What else is true, right? If you are insisting that this notepad is yellow, what else is true, right? Because we have to remove our attention from this notepad being yellow in order to identify what else may be true. You know, one of the easiest ways to shift a belief is to look for data that contradicts that belief. And that is exactly what I mean, right? We are simply, you know, this black and white thinking is, you know, I'm sure a lot of folks listening to this will be familiar with a confirmation. I mean, oh my gosh, oh my goodness. Confirmation bias, right? Essentially, it's like we believe a thing is true, so we're looking for data that proves our point. Anything that contradicts our point, we ignore, right? So if you are a person who is looking to find one right answer, ask yourself what else is true. Ask yourself what contradicts that one thing that you're focusing all your attention on. Because there's always an answer. There is always a contradiction. But you will only notice it if you ask.
And I think this is something that happens in burnout coaching so frequently. People come to a point and they say, so my choices are either like control everything and die in burnout or let go and everything falls apart. And I'm like, well, what might exist between those options? I can't count how many times I've asked people that particular question. What exists between those options? And it's the same question. What else might be true?
What else might be true?
Is in there. And it's not what else, what one thing might be true.
Yeah.
Because it could get very pointed, right? But it's like, if everything is a span, how many options are between A and B? How many can you?
But if you don't ask the question, you won't ever know the answer to that. Because that inquiry in itself takes effort.
Yeah.
And you have to be willing to do that, right? You have to be willing to go there and say, holy shit. Because it really does sort of implode your whole way of thinking if you're a very black and white, white, you know, thinker. It's asking you to see everything in between.
And or at least start with one thing. If we're gonna if we're gonna keep the nervous system safe while we do a new practice like this, then we start small, right? So maybe you find one other thing that could be true. What else could be true?
What else is true? You know, in design thinking, I used to teach design students, but sort of design thinking 101 is sort of how might we?
Yeah.
As opposed to we cannot, right? We don't say no, we don't say it's impossible. It's like, how might we?
Yeah.
Right. So how might this lead to something different? I think that framework is so helpful in everything we do. How might we, right? If we want to get from point A to point B, you know, and we're trying to figure that out, instead of saying it's impossible, instead of coming up against yourself in every sort of end or corner, reframe that and say, how might we, how might something else be true?
And if you are in a place where the steps are, you're saying, well, I'm here and I need to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And you're saying, well, that's impossible. The how might we might even be a longer journey. But what might the next step be in this direction?
That's right.
Just one. Because we tend to look at things and think, I have to go from there to there. And it's like a mountaintop and you don't have a trampoline. And it's like, you're not going to, this is not a cartoon.
Is that how we're getting to mountaintops these days, Kate?
Trampolines.
Trampoline?
Not a cartoon. Trampolining on as fast as you can, bouncing up. Right? And it's like, that's not how any of this is going to happen. So what would happen if there were 10 steps in between? What might the first one be?
That's it. One step. And then the next. And then the next.
And while you're at it, maybe there's a daffodil.
Perhaps. Very likely. And it's not always a daffodil. You know, there are many, many ways that you may find micro joys. But correct. Perhaps there's a daffodil. And there probably is.
This is something else that I found. Oh, of course, it's about the gray. Of course it is.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah. Microjoys teach us to hone our ability to live within the gray, neither perfect nor imperfect, and still find beauty there, regardless of what may be happening outside of ourselves and outside of our immediate control. That's why I stopped here. We perceive so much of the world in extremes and often opposites, good or bad, rich or poor, right or wrong. Happiness or sadness, either or, but rarely do we perceive things as both, all of it, this and that. And then this beautiful sentence. Nonetheless, that exact place of this and thatness is where micro joys reside.
That's it. It's holding all of it at the same time. But until we're willing to do that, it is very hard to access microjoy.
So this to me is like, when people are like, I was told to do a gratitude journal. My response is, no, we do resentment journals around here. Let's just dive into the lowest hanging fruit. And I know that that's where you're at. So let's just get there. But this is a, here's how to slowly find your way back to spontaneous gratitude and spontaneous joy and spontaneous awe. Mm-hmm. Not by cracking it open and needing to experience it all at once.
That's right. That's right.
But by
finding baby steps.
Just baby steps. And what I like, one of the other things that I really like about this book is because it is essays, I use Tosha Silver's book, Outrageous Openness, in a very similar way to the way I use this one. It's like when you're having a day, you pick up one of those books, this one or that one, and you flip to an essay, any essay, doesn't matter which one, and you read it as a reminder, as a devotional almost. You put yourself in that, but just to remind yourself, you don't have to read the whole thing. You don't have to fix everything at once. You don't have to even change your perspective. It's not going to take you 55 minutes. This is going to take
shortish essays.
They're short essays.
Under 7 minutes to read an essay. Somebody, I remember when the book came out, somebody said to me, we were doing an interview and she said, you know, I keep this book in my bathroom. And I said, you know, this is not a thing you should ever tell an author. She's like, absolutely not. She's like, do you know the other books that are in my bathroom? And she lists off all of these well-regarded authors. And she's like, these are the essays that I want to keep coming back to time and again. And I thought, well, shit, I don't hate being a book you have in your bathroom then. But my initial instinct was like, are you kidding me? But
you shitting me?
Are you shitting me? All to say is yes, that is the kind of book that this is. And that's very purposeful. You know, when I was in the middle of this, I could not sit down and write 300 pages that sort of where one thought led to another. I'm like, I got a thought that I can share with you right now. And in total, I might have 50 of them. That's what I have for you. But I can't sit down and follow one thought through in the middle of grief and in the middle of loss. And I think people can relate to that, you know, and even as you talk about one step, these essays are one step at a time.
One.
Yeah. One.
Read the introduction today.
That's it.
Read another thing tomorrow. You don't even have to read them in order.
No, you don't.
Mm-mm. I didn't actually read them in order. You don't have to. I don't know if I've read all of them.
Son of a bitch.
I flip to a page and read. Some of them I've read four times.
They'll find you when you need them.
Yeah. Yes.
They'll find you when you need them. And it's a small book.
Yeah. It's a micro joy in and of itself.
That's right. That's right. It is a good looking book.
Yes. For people that are out there and they're saying, okay, maybe I'll open myself up to this.
Yeah.
Do you have any words of warning or encouragement? Or both?
Yeah, I think, I don't know if it's words of warning or encouragement. I'd say if you are willing to attempt this practice, because microjoys and building this mindset is a practice, do not look for this to become a habit overnight. Just notice one thing that is good or right in the world, right? You're not trying to change everything else, but just continue to do this one day at a time, one moment at a time. So it's not encouragement. It's not either, right? Again, like most things I say, I'm like, they're not either. They just are. You know, this is a practice that we build, but it is very accessible. And the idea of building a mindset of microjoys is, of all of the things that I think about in personal growth and development, feels the most accessible. Now, of course, I'm biased. I coined the term. But I do think having really sort of defined this in the midst of so much shit, that I can recognize what is more accessible. And this is a very accessible way to shift your mindset. Not a warning, not encouragement. It just is.
Just is. Where should people find you? This, folks, if you're not following Cindy on Instagram, like, please do yourself the favor, first of all. And that will be, you know, it'll be in the show notes somewhere. But where would you send people to find you?
Yeah, I send people to Instagram. I send them to my website and I send them to Substack at Life Created. So people really like my newsletter, which is called Life Created. I think it's lovely. It's an essay that I write once a week. And quite frankly, they're all micro joys. There's also at the end of every essay, there's something, a section I call One Fine Micro Joy, which shouldn't surprise anyone. And it is literally listing a micro joy every week. So find me on Instagram. Go to Instagram. That's usually the lowest hanging fruit, but I am everywhere at my name.
All of those things, as per usual, Fried Fam, will be in the show notes. My big goal for today, you know that there's always something that I want you to take away for your healing from every single episode that we do. And my goal for you today is to get reacquainted with, or acquainted with for the first time, the idea of micro joys and the gray, the idea of coexistence, the idea that we can move away from this thought process that you've probably been stuck in longer than you wanted to be. And getting out of it requires effort. It requires paying attention. It requires opening up to something. But once you do, it's there and it's yours. And it's the cost of a book. We can all manage that.
Mm.
Thank you so much.
Oh, it's been a real pleasure.
With my people, Fried Fam. Mm-hmm. If you would love to share your micro joys, you can do that in the Facebook group. You can shoot me an email. You can find us in all the places that you always find us. But I would love a collection of them that I could gather onto a page and then share with Cindy.
So, oh, that would be beautiful.
Please find a way to share a micro joy with me that I can collect and create into something beautiful.
What a gift.
Isn't that fun?
What a gift you are.
Can't wait to see what happens. Fried Fam, thank you. And see you next time.
Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Got each other on our side, plus all the folks at Fried, the Burnout Podcast with Kate Donovan.